Our final speaker we welcome to Fermanagh is Jesse Joe Jacobs, back in June 2002. Jesse was one of a group of local people who set up an organisation called A Way Out as a response to addiction and poverty among women and young people in Stockton-on-Tees. So, Jesse, we're very much looking forward to your contribution.
Great. It's funny, actually, sat here in this sofa, because it was actually June 2002 that we sat on quite similar sofas in my grandma's lounge. And, a group of, I think there was six women and one guy. And we sat in that lounge with this thing called a constitution, which was, a way of beginning a charity formally. And so we sat in the lounge and a coffee table a little bit like this, and discussed what we were going to do about the fact that there were women and young people who were whose lives were being teared apart through addiction and sexual exploitation. So I'm kind of reliving the moment. Is it all right? We kind of keep going up and down. So I'm kind of reliving the moment here with you all. But I thought I'd share a little bit. I might go up there, actually, and then I'll be able to see you all a bit better. To tell you how I came to start this charity. I was brought up in a working-class town of Stockton-on-Tees, and you can't really tell with my hair straight, but I'm mixed race and in quite a white kind of working class town. And I did everything I could to get out of the town, really. Worked hard, went to university, got myself a degree and got a job in quite a good company on a graduate scheme. To cut a really long story short, I kind of felt like I'd been screwed over a bit for a promotion, and this kind of other male graduate was taking all the credit for my work, and quite upset me because I was going to suddenly have to work for him as my boss. So I decided to leave. And if you meet people who are kind of social entrepreneurs, we've been given that phrase now, you quite often, I met a group of them actually, and they're all about kind of 40, 50s, and they all said they'd reached this kind of midlife crisis moment where they decided to do something about the issues that they saw in the world. And my midlife crisis was at 22. And because I jacked my job in and went traveling. And I met some people who were living differently. They were missionaries and they were giving their lives over to serving other people. And it was quite a profound kind of thing for me. And I came back to Teesside and didn't really know what to do. So I did a master's and go back to education. And actually started volunteering at a local project. And I was out one night on the streets, and this was like a soup kitchen. And I remember a little girl coming onto this bus, which was mostly for homeless people and people with addictions. And she was really young. I mean, she looked about 13. And we kind of had to tell her that she couldn't really be on the bus because she was too young. And obviously this was for people with addictions. It turned out that this little girl actually had an addiction. She was on heroin. It also turned out that the reason why she was in that area was because she was street working in prostitution. And she was selling her body for drugs. And it was her boyfriend, her boyfriend had got her onto drugs and had sent her out onto the streets. He was actually a well-known gangster. And meeting her was quite profound, but it wasn't actually until I was also volunteering in a quite kind of white middle-class church youth group, and there was other kind of little girls who were there, and their Friday night was songs and games and dancing. And when I looked out at this group of young girls, really free and really happy and enjoying a Friday night, something just broke in my heart. Because I thought, that other little girl's out there right now. And she stood selling her body into prostitution. And she should be in this youth group and she isn't. She's injecting drugs and she's wearing a short skirt and she's waiting for a car to come and pick her up. And that broke my heart. And I gathered with other people who cared about this stuff, and we sat in a lounge, in my grandma's lounge, and we discussed what we could do. I wasn't trained. I didn't have, as I said, I was 22. I was mixed race. I wasn't a social worker, and I didn't have skills or experience, but I just had a broken heart. And we decided that we would set up a charity to try and help these young women. And the charity was, all we really had actually was a heart. Like, I talk about, our tagline eventually became love, hope and freedom. And there's a very, for me, there's always been a very kind of powerful connection between love and freedom, but also the opposite of that, which is kind of control and power. And I won't go too much into it, but I thought I'd actually share some of my journey, not just of the work that we did with the girls, but also this kind of this struggle between power and love and freedom and control, and also hope and fear. So we decided that with little experience and little resources, I think we had £42, we'd start a charity. And most people thought we were crazy, and particularly my family, who'd paid for my education. But it was amazing, and actually we ended up opening a drop-in, and women came in off the streets who were involved in the sex trade, and they really responded to a non-judgmental approach that just said, we're there for you and we love you. And we actually became kind of pioneers in like bringing love back into social care, because we started going in this like child protection training, because you have to get professional in this industry. I could talk lots about that. Where it was like you couldn't even use the word love. It was like unconditional positive regard and the sideways hug. Social workers in the room. and you have to, if someone wants a hug, you have to take them to the side and pat them on the back. And, you know, for us, that wasn't enough, because actually the need, the issues were complex and the roots were complex. But the issues that were being faced were complex, but there was this common need, and that was love and acceptance and hope. And so that's what we became. And we began to reach out. In the first year, we'd engage with 150 people. We began to be given funding as people started to understand that maybe loving people wasn't as scary as they thought. And also that we weren't going to take all of their funding, which is the other thing about power and control and fear. And we employed a team of people, and the work continued to expand. And women would come in off the streets, and they would be loved, and they would be accepted. And sometimes some of them would find a way out of these situations. I'd like to say that that happened all the time, but it didn't. It's really hard work, and there were so many deep-rooted issues that women were facing. And I used to beat myself up about kind of, oh, they're still in this situation, they're still on drugs, or they're still, you know, they might be working once a week where they used to be working every night. But I realised that kind of freedom was a journey, and that actually our most important role we could do was walk people on their journey. And it was okay that they weren't coming off drugs overnight. And because actually the fact that we'd been there, the fact that, you know, no one had offered them hope before, no one had offered them a way out before, no one had been there, was okay. And we kind of became family. And it was hard, but it was also amazing. And I speak in the past tense, because actually in April I did hand over the charity. And I'd say, though, that for me, one of the most challenging parts of the journey wasn't the journey with the women. It was everything else. It was the system. It was the sector that existed around us that made it sometimes so difficult. Because funding, you know, where does the power lie in trying to make change? Well, often you start out innovative and you start out without too many people telling you what to do. and eventually you've got lots of people telling you what to do and how to be, and that was a real challenge, and we became bureaucratic. And also, I was quite a kind of vocal in what I wanted to say about issues, and the more that the system, or I guess the sector, changed, as in funding being lost and decisions that were being made that were affecting dramatically people on the ground, I found that I wasn't able to speak out. I couldn't be a voice for change because the people I wanted to speak to were also the people who were funding us, and I didn't have the same freedom. We didn't have the same freedom that we did when we sat in the lounge and said, "What can we do? And let's just love." And so, in April, I actually handed over the role. But the charity itself will continue and does continue to do amazing things and tries and will hopefully always try to keep its values, I think, in the sector itself, to try and keep the heart of the sector, to try and keep the heart of what these things are about in amongst the struggles, in amongst the people and the power and the fear and control that would try and tell you what to do and how to do it and when to do it, to try and keep your values and your heart and love at the centre is actually a way that we can see real freedom for people. And even if we can't see real freedom, we can see some people loved and accepted and not judged and having a place to come. Thank you.